Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know the weather. It looks like it's a little hot. You're going to talk about temperatures, around 90 during the day. That's what happens this time of year. But there's a very interesting thing that is also happening, and that is that the humidity is amazingly low for the Gulf Coast. And that's part of what this season is about. It's why your tomatoes are going to do really well. In spite of the heat, you're going to have those cool nights where you're going to get tons and tons of tomato set. It's really great weather, really wonderful weather after that heavy rain. I hope that rain can keep us going for just a little while. Doesn't look like we're going to get a lot more. But it's a beautiful day along the Gulf Coast. I've been thinking this past week, which is always a, I'm out there working in the garden, and I had this thought, and here it is, and it just sort of boils down a whole lot of thinking. And we've talked about soil, we've talked about seasons, we've talked about a whole lot of things that have to do with how to make a garden work. But let me add this to your list. It's an important one. It's a really important one. And the thought is this: if your garden, if your vegetable garden too much resembles what your grocery store shelves are about, look like, you've missed it. You don't want your garden to look like what you buy at the grocery store. There's a lot of reasons for that, and I keep stressing that over and over. It's that, well, the grocery store, what you find at the grocery store, and that's what most of us grew up with, honestly. It's, you know, we grew up on those, you know, right there next to the buggy, going up and down those aisles with mom or dad or whoever. That's the kind of food we know. We know we grew up with the company store before we grew up with the grocery store. And the company store let you have what they wanted you to have, what was cheap. So they made sure you had plenty of sugar because they could get sugar for cheap. And that's become part of our southern diet, big part of our southern diet. It's an interesting thing. My great-grandmother from the country, who didn't live next to the country store, didn't use much sugar, never put sugar in her tea. My relatives who grew up around the company store, who had no choice but to take what the company store offered, they put sugar in their tea. It's an interesting thing how all that works. And the same thing happens with the grocery store, because what's in the grocery store shelves is what it was convenient for somebody to ship to you. Not necessarily what would be the best ingredient, and certainly not the best product, because most of that grocery store produce has been engineered to be easier to ship, and so that it doesn't have a taste that may offend anyone. Somebody was talking about the other day, oh, I had a banana pepper that I got, and I grew it in my garden, and I ate it, and it tasted like water. Well, yeah. I said, I wonder why, and I said, well, it's because it was engineered to taste that way. They don't want it to taste too much, because if it tastes too much, it might offend somebody. Because we've trained our taste buds to deal with relatively tasteless grocery store produce. You don't want your garden to resemble the grocery store. So here's the funny thing. This is my karma. This is my terrible karma. You've heard me talk about celery before, and you've heard me talk about the Holy Trinity. Oh, I'm going to talk about it again, because it's irritating me more and more the more I think about this so-called Holy Trinity of Cajun food. And the more I've said it before, celery wasn't part of Cajun cuisine. Bell peppers weren't part of Cajun cuisine. Bulbing onions weren't part of Cajun cuisine until the 30s and 40s and 50s, and mostly in the 40s, 50s, 60s, when it became available at grocery stores, because Cajun cuisine was based on what you got from food service trucks who were shipping in produce in refrigerated means, by refrigerated means, or at the grocery store. And that's what began our thinking about, oh, well, you got to have the Holy Trinity to cook Cajun food. Well, I can guarantee you Paul Prudhomme's mother and grandmother didn't go down to the Publix. They didn't go to the Publix to get celery, because that was the only place. I mean, Publix, nobody had celery. So I asked a friend to check in the 1900 Picayune cookbook, right at the turn of the century, the Times Pick, what later became the Times Pick, the newspaper that became the Times Pick, the old Picayune cookbook published by the newspaper, sort of the Old Testament of cooking along in New Orleans. And I said, look it up for me. Do some research for me. See if you can find celery in there. Well, there's a one-line mention of celery. And it's clear it was not used in any, as a base for any food. It was used as kind of a specialty item, and in 600 and something pages, there's one sentence on celery. Bell peppers. Nobody mentions bell peppers. Nobody mentions Holy Trinity of cooking in 1900. Now, what does this mean? Does this mean that Cajun cooking is inauthentic? You know, that doesn't matter. Really? I'm not talking about what's authentic Cajun or what's authentic Creole or what's authentic Southern. I'm talking about developing a cuisine based in a place that grows out of the land, that really takes advantage of everything the land has to offer. And when you're trying to get, when you've developed a cooking school that's based on what people in France were using to put in their mirepoix, because that's what grew well in France, you've missed it. You've missed it entirely. So you know what Paul Prudhomme's mother and grandmother used in their stews? It was like green gumbo. It was like gumbo's herb. It was the herbs of the field. It was the herbs of those Acadian prairies. It was things like mustards, which everybody could have in their gardens because they were easy to grow. It was things like collards. No slight on collards. It was things like turnip stems. That's what you used instead of celery. It was okra. And, you know, another important thing to think about was you could never say, oh, well, they used this instead of celery. That would be not true. They used everything instead of celery based on what was available in each season. And each season, the gumbo tasted a little bit different. And you know what? That's a really fine thing. That's a really great thing. And you begin to explore how many different ways you could make gumbo so that it tasted like the place and the land. And I can guarantee you that the gumbo Paul Prudhomme's mother and grandmother made was richer and deeper in flavors because they understood the land. They understood that food didn't come off of the food truck. The refrigerated food truck. It came out of the land. It came out of the place. Something to think about. Something to think about. Give me a call this morning, 251-343-0106. Let's talk about what's growing in your garden. Let's talk about how to make better use of your garden so that you're growing the great produce that can be produced along the Gulf Coast, that really can't be produced anywhere else, that's really intrinsic to where we are, that we do really, really well, rather than trying to imitate France by growing celery, which you're not going to do very well, or reducing something as beautiful and as wonderful as peppers to something like the bell pepper, which was developed so that it was shippable without getting bruised or crushed and losing all of its flavor and most of its quality in the process. How do we create a great Gulf Coast cuisine? How do we create a great Southern cuisine that that isn't based on the food truck, for once, that isn't handed down to us from the company store. Let's talk about that. Give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Beautiful pictures of gardens right now. Beautiful pictures of tomatoes coming in. Great looking peppers. Ooh, I see those ahis. We ought to talk about ahis this morning. It's an interesting thing. We'll talk a little bit about it. We've got a bunch of questions. You know, so I'm going to talk about it now. Since Dan's always making me talk about things, right? Maybe sooner than I meant to. But here it is. So Dan's got these beautiful little peppers, and I think I detect ahi lemon in there. Is that right, Dan? And some other great peppers. And yeah, you don't go to the grocery store and see a little shelf with a label, ahi lemon pepper. Ahi lemon, however you want to say it. The ahi pepper that's this beautiful, beautiful yellow. And it is hot. Is it not hot? But you know, we've taken to using, so I had to, because I lost a lot of my peppers for a variety of reasons this winter, I had to use jalapenos. They're okay. Jalapenos, whatever you want to say. But I think, you know, I don't want to grow jalapenos because I can grow things so much neater, like ahi lemon or this ahi crystal that I've been growing. Dan, it's a great one. And we use it as a substitute for the, we don't use it as a substitute, but we do use it as instead of jalapenos because they're so much better. They give a such brighter, good, delicious taste, and they're so much easier to grow. And you know the other thing about ahi crystal? You can keep it alive for 3 or 4 years on the Gulf Coast. It's absolutely amazing. Not hard at all. We can talk about that. And there's so many great flavors in peppers, and we sort of relegate ourselves to only the peppers that the food truck will deliver to us at the Publix or the Winn-Dixie or the Walmarts or wherever it is that you're shopping. That our gumbo has to be made. Can I just go on about this for a minute? Your garden should not resemble grocery store shelves because grocery store shelves are the lowest common denominator. They're not there. Those vegetables aren't there because they're traditional. You've used them because it was the only thing you had. Because we had forgotten about our ties to the land. We had forgotten about that Cajun food and Creole food and Gulf Coast food and Southern food was about our ties to the land, not our ties to the grocery store. For Pete's sakes. So, Dan, you made me do it. There it is. Hey, Mike from Grand Bay sent me a picture, and I want to with his tomatoes, and this is a problem. It happens a lot. It's one of the easier questions to diagnose, one of the easier problems to diagnose when it comes to tomatoes. And I always wait for these, Mike, because it happens to a lot of people. It doesn't have to. And what you've got is a disease called bacterial wilt. It has all the classic symptoms of bacterial wilt because of the sudden death of those tomatoes. They're very healthy one day, and then suddenly, boom, gone the next. And it's not an accident. It is not an accident that your tomatoes were doing really, really well until you got this little bit of rainfall that came in with the tropical storm. And suddenly, boom, they're gone. Just in a day or two, They're completely wilted. A lot of people are going to have this problem. And bacterial wilt is caused by a bacteria. And you say, well, what do I do about this bacteria? Well, the bacteria is always there. It's always there in your soils. It's just, it's almost inevitable that it's going to be in your soils. The thing that you want to do is keep it from proliferating. And it's why we stress so much building lots of organic matter in your soil. And we can talk about what good drainage means, and you can talk about, but it means organic matter. And the more you can get organic matter into your soil, and Mike, call me about it. We'll talk about how you can do it, how you can get it into your soil. But I use leaves. Leaves are great. They're incredible. And I'm not talking about little handfuls of leaves. I'm talking about a bag of leaves. I'm talking about a bag or two of leaves for each tomato I plant. And when you do that, you won't have bacterial wilt. You let those leaves molder down, you plant your tomatoes right in there, and you won't have bacterial wilt because the conditions that allow that bacteria to thrive won't exist anymore. I used to have bacterial wilt. I got with a plan, realized, gosh, this organic matter is really important. I haven't had bacterial wilt in tomatoes in 20 years. It's absolutely amazing. And there it is. What can you do now? Well, nothing. Your tomatoes are dead. Once you know that they have bacterial wilt, it's going to be a matter of 36 hours and they're gone. Your other tomatoes may survive because the bacteria may not proliferate there. But, Mike, when you're doing this in the future, remember the organic matter. It's really important. If I haven't said enough about how to build that organic matter in, you give me a call, Mike, and let's talk about it. We will talk about it. It'll be a lot of fun. Benjamin has sent me a question about oaks, and I'm going to think about it. We're going to talk about it on the show. So stay tuned, Benjamin. We're going to talk a little bit about the kinds of oaks you should plant and why you should plant them. We'll talk more about that. But we got a couple of callers. Hey, Phil, who's my first caller? Carmen, I'm listening.
Hello, hi.
Can you hear me, Carmen? I think you got a little bit of echo. Turn your radio down.
Okay, hold on.
There you go. You got it, Carmen? You there? She's working on it.
Can you hear me?
She's working on it. There we go.
Okay. I want to start a garden, and I grow flowers, and, you know, I have plenty of flowers. I have a green thumb, but I've never started a garden before. And I'd like to know, what do I need to start with to grow the garden? Tomatoes, I heard you say tomatoes and onions and green peppers. Hello?
Well, and so... Yeah, let's talk about that, you know, because now you're starting kind of late. If you can find some tomatoes this time of year, it's actually an okay time to plant them. Get them small, don't get a big one,
okay.
And let it grow up. It won't actually start producing until fall. So tomatoes are okay. Okra is a great thing to plant. I love okra. I hope I can convince you to like it. Do you like okra?
I wasn't a fan of it until I moved down south. Yeah.
Okay. Like So you had to be. So okra is a great thing. It's a beautiful thing. Carmen, let me tell you, we could have so much fun talking about this, because okra, the best way to eat okra, and this is going to just freak people out, but I'm going to tell you a little secret.
Okay.
And a lot of people have begun doing this. The best way to eat okra is raw. Oh, man.
Okay.
It is so good.
I like it raw.
Just slice it up and put it in salads. Absolutely delicious. But okra is a great thing to plant right now. It is an absolutely beautiful thing to plant right now, and it is a great way to get started. If you can find good peppers, it's a great time to start peppers, too. It'll probably be this fall before they start producing. But okra is going to give you a quick impact. You're going to get okra really good, really quickly, from about 50 days, and you'll have a good okra crop.
When is a good time to start the collard greens and the tomatoes?
Collards, yes, ma'am. Let me tell you, collards will produce longer than almost anything else you can plant, but You don't want to start them until August. So you'll start them from seed in August, and then you'll put them in the garden in late September when the bugs aren't so bad. And then you'll have collards in October, November, December, January, February, March. How many fingers is that? I always have to stop and count. That's six fingers. So you'll have six fingers worth of collards. That's a great thing, but you want to start those in fall.
Thank you so much. When I get started, I'll keep you informed and let you know how it's going.
Hey, Carmen, listen, stay tuned because we're going to talk a little bit about soil this morning and how to make it. We always do. So stay tuned and we'll talk a little bit about how to make your soil. Okay?
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Great.
Have a great day.
Yes, ma'am.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I got to take a break, but I know I got another caller. Phil, will our caller hold on for a second? Yes, I guess they will. All right, good. We got a couple of callers coming in, so we'll be back to those. Got a lot of texts. Hey, we'll be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right. Okay. Let's get on with this. Hey, a couple of things, and we're going to be back to a couple of issues. And I want to let me go to Mike first because Mike sent me a picture of his tomatoes and clearly suffering from bacterial wilt. Josh, Mike, I'll also say that Josh spoke up for you and said, Hey, I've been helping Mike gather leaves and things for his garden for years. So I know he's got plenty of organic matter. So let's talk about this a little bit. Was this just in one place in your garden?
No, I've got two separate rows up, Bill. I bought the Celebrity and the Better Boy, and I separated them just because both of the variety was wilt resistant, and I've got the rows are only 8 feet apart or so, and I lost a couple during a drought, but I was watering them, and I've got a 25 by 35 foot garden. I've got two 16 foot trailer loads of limbs that's been there a couple years that's buried in the soil. And I've got leaves covered over the top of it. And I didn't till, I just dug down where it was at. One thing I did not do, and I realize it's an error of my ways probably, is I did not crack the soil. And I've learned that might have been very important.
It can be. So, it's a drainage issue, and the best way to address that drainage is with if you're growing in pure organic matter that's breaking down, leaf mold that's breaking down, it always drains really well. It also seems to discourage the bacteria itself. So I guess that's one of the reasons. Cracking the soil can help underneath. Because it allows the water to drain out when we get these heavy rainfalls. Did you have any problem? You did lose a few plants during the drought.
Yes, I did. That's when it started, but I was watering pretty heavy with soaker hose.
Yeah. So what we've got, we know we've got bacterial wilt in that soil. There's just no question, and it always shows up, and we know it's going to be a little virulent. One of the things to do is next year, you definitely want to try your tomatoes in a different place.
When I first started losing them, and I agree with you, I didn't do a crop rotation. I planted them where I just grew tomatoes the past couple of years, and I put them in the same place. The Better Boys are in a different place. I've never planted tomatoes there.
Yeah. So, and it was still there. So here's what I do. There may be some issues with just drainage in general. Drainage is tough for us. And in Grand Bay, if you're living in a pretty wet place and the water's all concentrating there underneath the ground, it can be really hard, but cracking the soil will help. Let me tell you what I do. Basically, I start in the fall before, and by that I mean September or even in the summer, because people are still putting leaf bags out. There's still tons of leaves. People are still raking them up. And I start building the soil where I'm going to plant my tomatoes. I just take a row, just leave it bare, and I build those leaves up about 4 feet high, 4 to 5 feet high, and about three feet wide in that bed, and the length of the bed where I'm going to put those tomatoes. I try to do it in a place where I've not grown tomatoes in the past couple of years, but sometimes I have to put it back where I put the tomatoes the year before. But I build it up 4 feet high and just let that molder down. I don't even have to turn it much. I mean, really, it's going to all pretty much molder down by spring when it's time to plant those tomatoes. And then I just plant the tomatoes level with the tops of those leaves. But it's getting that extra volume of leaves that it can grow in that makes a big difference. And essentially, the plant is growing in leaf mold more than it is in soil. Have you done it that way before, Mike?
No, I haven't. I had about 3 foot of leaves in another spot that I didn't plant anything on this year that has molded down already to like a foot high. But yeah, I hadn't planted there, but I will. I hadn't put it right in the mold. No, I have dug into the dirt every
yeah,
time.
Yeah, you want to have enough mold that you can grow right in that mold, because the first, and even if you just, you know, if part of the plant is down a little bit below that, that's just fine. But you want most of the roots to grow in that leaf mold on the top. And the only way to do that is build you a big pile. Sounds like you did it. Let it molder on down and then plant right in it. And you will solve that bacterial wilt problem. You'll also have some of the best tomatoes you've ever grown. And after a few years of that, and I don't do the whole garden. Can I just, Mike, let me just interrupt to say, I don't do the whole garden that way. I just do it with the sensitive plants. I know that okra, I don't have to do that with okra, because okra is not that sensitive. And I don't do it with field peas, because field peas aren't that problems. But I do it for my tomatoes, and I do it for my eggplants, and I do it for most of my peppers. And then I just rotate. You see what I'm saying? And then the other plants, the beans and everything else, they're going to do just fine with what's left over. So that's how I do it. So every year I take one row where I'm going to do my tomatoes, my eggplants, and maybe my peppers. Just really build that soil up, plant my tomatoes right there. I don't think you'll ever have another problem with bacterial wilt. Add a little bit of calcium, a little bit of lime, or some wood ashes.
I've been putting wood ashes on them, and I have plenty of wood ashes, so I've hit it with that pretty good.
So that'll be good.
I'm in a very shaded lot, and I only have about 3 to 4 hours of sunlight a day, and it's the wrong time. It's the middle of the day, and I don't have an ideal garden spot, but I enjoy it.
Mike, can we talk about that? So you're right. You've hit it. You got the light at not the best time of day. Is there any way you can get morning light by cutting some lower limbs on some trees adjacent? Watch that light and look at what's being intercepted between 8 o'clock and, say, 11 o'clock, and just target the limbs that are blocking that sunlight. Don't worry about everything else, just the limbs that are blocking that sunlight. And they may be fairly low, and it may be, and you may be able to get some of those and get a little bit more light in the morning.
I'm pretty surrounded
by
trees everywhere. So, you know, it's just one of those things.
Yeah. Well, Mike, so try building up your soil a little bit and see if that doesn't help a lot with your tomatoes this coming year. And, you know, it's not too late. Give a tomato a start. Give a tomato a start for fall, and let's see how they do for fall and the stuff that and the stuff you've already got moldering down.
I was going to ask you about that. I wanted to plant some seeds. You know, if you're according to your garden calendar, it's the time to do it in June. First, actually, I'm a little late, and fall tomato seeds. And I wanted there was a tomato that you recommended. I forgot. It was like an Italian tomato or something. Seeds for, is that locally available?
It's hard to find them, no. And you know, you'd have to order some seeds now, but there's some great ones. I'll tell you, there's several that I'm trialing that I'm really beginning to like. There's one called Puerto Cortez that I've been really impressed with. It's done very, very well for us. If mm-hmm. you can find it online, it was a couple of places were selling it. So it's a good time to try, but you know, if you want to start from seed, I think you're probably going to need to order the seed. Otherwise I'd buy I'd go ahead and buy a tomato plant, towards the end of June, and don't get a big one, get a small one, because you actually want them. I won't go into the detail why, but don't feel like you need to get a big one. It just won't help. Get a smaller one. Or start your seeds now if you want to order them online and shop around online and look for some tomatoes that interest you at some of the big tomato growing sites, and then holler back at me and let's talk about them.
Okay. How long do I have before I start those seeds?
Next week. So you got to call me next Sunday.
that would be pretty quick to get seeds in, though, shipped to me. I mean, the planting time.
You're right. Go ahead and look for some black cherry. I think you can get some in, or black cherry would be great to go ahead and plant for fall. I think you'll do real well there. You know, you could probably do okay with Cherokee Purple in spite of the stink bugs, and you'll probably find Cherokee Purple at some of the you know, the big box stores and some of the other places. It's a good one. Give them a try in that bed that you have and see if they don't do a whole lot better there.
Okay. I really appreciate it. Enjoy your show.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. So, Phil, have I just pushed the break? No. Have I got any time left? No. Hey, well, let me try to. Okay. So, James, can you hold on? I really want to answer that citrus question, and I hope we're going to be able to do it. Somebody sent me a picture. Can this shrub be salvaged? And it's an Indian hawthorn. And let me just the brief answer is no, it can't be. Indian hawthorn has a really hard time, and some cultivars are better than others, but they all have a hard time. You have one of the worst cultivars for getting the fungal diseases. If you live where there's salt spray and a good breeze, you know, we find that you can actually keep these things alive, but in a normal yard, you can't do it. And you'd have to know it's always going to look that way. It's just that simple. There's not really an effective treatment for doing that. So it's a great opportunity to plant something really good. So call me, and we'll figure out what that really good thing might be. So, yeah, that's not going to work at all. If I got any other, let's see. Oh, we got to take a break now. John, I'm going to talk about that sunflowers. I think I'm understanding what you're asking, John in Irvington, but we'll come back and talk about that as soon as we get back, and we got a good citrus question that we're going to deal with too. Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. A lot of things to do. So Jim at Georgetown sent me a picture of a mushroom, which looks to me a little bit like an oyster mushroom. But, Jim, here's the thing. I've decided that I should really confess that I'm not going to identify a mushroom positively by a picture because there's we got too many mushrooms. And sometimes the guides aren't always right, and sometimes they don't capture all of the diversity that we see in mushrooms here in the Southeast. I wish I knew more about mushrooms, and it is a deficiency in my upbringing, I'll have to say, that I wasn't taught to identify mushrooms better. Of course, I wasn't taught to identify trees better either, something I taught myself, but I haven't taught myself to identify some of the strange southern mushrooms. So I'm not sure, Jim. I'm going to take a look at it and think about it and come up with a good diagnosis, but not a diagnosis that's good enough to tell you, yeah, go ahead and eat it. Just can't do it. Hey, James Wright, James has a question about citrus. Is James still there?
Yes.
Hey, James, tell me what's up.
I have a lemon tree and a sesame tree that's producing great. The only problem is that before the fruit can get, when they're green, I have problems with blackbirds and crows picking them, making them look ugly because they take the green husk off of them.
So, isn't that interesting? So, occasionally this happens, and we've heard of this happen. I haven't heard, had a call on it in a while, but John Olive and I used to comment on this because every now and then the birds in a certain area will learn to rub themselves on the fruits of the citrus. And it's a learned behavior, and it only happens in certain places at certain times, and suddenly there'll just be a whole flock of birds coming in. And the birds apparently are doing this because the citrus oils are really great at discouraging mites and other things that are bothering the birds, and somehow they learn to do this. And it can cause some damage to the fruit. So I just said what's happening,
well,
but I didn't tell
you. I mean, the fruit inside is usually good for the leg, but they just look bad, you know.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
I can tell what you said because I sat and watched them, and they were taking the hull and rubbing it under their wings and things.
Isn't that funny? It's just weird, isn't it? And sometimes they'll learn to do it, and sometimes they don't. So, you know, if it doesn't hurt the fruit and you don't have to sell it,
right.
You know, and you may have to sell it to your mother-in-law in one way or another, but if you don't have to do that, then you're okay. And so, you know, that's just a weird thing.
I even tried buying the little stovetop aluminum rings and placing them around the tree, and it lasted for about a week, and then they got used to that, and they come right back.
Yeah, that's right. So next year, here's the thing to do. And this, I'm not guaranteeing anything. This is no guarantee. But I will tell you that if you don't, you got to stop birds before they get in the habit. Once they're in the habit, you're done. I mean, you could do anything. You could shoot at them and they'd still be back. So, but next year, knowing that you got a few birds trained, put up the whirligigs or whatever you put them up before they start messing with the fruit and see if that doesn't help. You know, the only other thing to do is to put up netting, and netting will help. But you know, now that they've learned about how good those fruits are and how good they are for them, they'll even go under the netting if you don't put it on there just right. But netting would be fine, would be a fine way of dealing with it. And I think once you discourage them from it, you know, and kind of break that habit, I think you might not have it happen again in future years.
But it's just citrus. I'm planning, I have some watermelon plants and stuff like that, but that's safe. It's
no.
Just citrus.
It's just a citrus because it's got that citrus oil in the peel. You know, it's that great thing about, it's like that satsuma when you break that peel open and you get it all over your hands and it smells so good. That's what they're after, and they love that oil, and it's really good at discouraging the mites, and they know it.
All righty. Thank you.
James, good luck on that. Man, isn't that a funny thing? And, you know, it doesn't happen everywhere. It doesn't happen for everybody's tree. It just happens sometimes on some trees, and it's interesting, and it may not happen forever. It may be just a couple of years or a year or just this year. Maybe next year they won't be back. But every now and then they learn that behavior, and it's a funny thing. And old James, he's had to deal with it, but it doesn't affect the fruit flavor too much. It doesn't. I mean, sometimes you'll see a little bit of bruising, but it looks like that somebody just scraped it bare, kind of rubbed it bare, which is what they did on the surface, but the fruit's still really, really good. Hey, David Hubble, my good friend and great Louisiana cook and student of traditional Louisiana cooking and Louisiana soils and what they produced. He took the bait this morning, and he's going to call back. It's interesting, and so I just made a few little additions to some of the things we talked about with Cajun cooking. You know, David, by the way, I went and looked up celery because, to my great embarrassment, I ended up buying celery this year as a plant, and I didn't know I was buying it, and I wasn't paying attention, and I put it out in the garden, and I took a bite of it, and I thought, oh my gosh, what is this? This is horrible. I thought it was parsley, and then I looked down, and it was stalking up, and I said, oh my goodness, what an idiot. I bought celery rather than parsley, and you know, everything, it should have, it just doesn't develop very well here. It's too hot too soon. It's just not very good. But it's interesting. So I've been doing a lot more research about celery. And celery wasn't even a big European commodity until they figured out how to grow it on these big industrial landscapes. Interesting story. And that was an 18th century thing. And then it was eventually became a 20th century thing in New Orleans, apparently. But it's interesting. Hey, look up the Picayune Cookbook, David. It's interesting to see what they have, if you've got a copy of it. I got my friend David Holloway to look it up for me. It was interesting. So we've talked our way through an hour. We got lots of texts. We got lots of callers. We're going to be back with lots to talk about, so stay tuned. And give us a call, 251-343-0106.